So tonight's speaker is Mary T. Mary sponsors a lot of ladies up in Gainesville, and she's working on 43 years. You can run into her at the Gainesville Classic Group.
Thank you so much, Tim. Good evening. I'm so grateful to be at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. There's nowhere I'm more grateful to be than right here.
Yeah, I'm married. I'm an alcoholic.
I've been an alcoholic a very, very long time. Like a lot of us, I started using fairly early, not the earliest I've ever heard. I was 12 the first time that, I wasn't 12 the first time I had a drink, but I was 12 the first time I felt the effects of a drink. So I had, alcohol was a mystic substance that adults got to have and children did not, which made me want it. I would ask for sips here and there. I would take, but I didn't really feel anything from it other than a little grown up until I was 12 and I really drank. And what happened that night for me, we used to play a stupid game called 10 breaths. And have you ever played? You go one, two to ten, and somebody comes up behind you and grabs you really tight and tries to make you pass out. Okay? And it never worked on me, okay? Ever. Until the first night I got drunk. And the first night I got drunk, when they played 10 breaths with me, I passed out, and I came out of being passed out in this swirling tumult of light and color. And at the end was a light, and I was coming closer and closer and closer and closer and closer until, bam, I was looking at the light on the dehumidifier. That was the end of my tunnel, the dehumidifier. Yeah, it was magic, man. I'm telling you, it was magic. For the first time, I was okay with life. I wasn't uncomfortable in my skin. I could always talk to people. I'm from a show business family. It was my job to be memorable. It was your job to remember me. And that's a really big defect that I had to work on a lot, because I didn't remember people's name. I didn't. And people are important. And they're very important to me today. But they weren't always. And that's sad. Once I got that first drink, anytime, anywhere, anyhow, any way I could get more, I was going to get more. So I had my first drink at 12. By the time I was 13, I'm drinking alone. I'm taking liquor out of my grandma's liquor cabinet and pouring it. A little sweet vermouth, a little dry vermouth, a little cream vermouth, a little whiskey, a little vodka, a little gin, a little, you know, just a little, like a tablespoon of each. And then, oh, that's nasty. Let's put some Kool-Aid with that. That's nastier, but I drink it anyway. And then sit there and try not to pee, because I was so sure that if I peed, I'd lose my high, right? Because I didn't have to pee before I drank. That must be the key to keeping the high. I don't know. It was so stupid. And then my grandma would come home, and I'd run to the bathroom and pee, thinking, now I'll go do it straight. And that didn't quite work either. And I did it every time. Every time. The insanity is amazing. And so, you know, but it was fun. I didn't drink at parties. I wasn't invited. I wasn't invited. I was always the new kid at school. I was weird. I didn't fit in. So I drank where I could. I drank alone. And then I got a job when I was 14 and moved out of all the family houses and started paying rent, which sucked. But I drank, which didn't. My days were pretty average. I got up, I drank. I put on makeup, I drank. I got ready for work, I drank. I cried off my makeup while I listened to the blues, and I drank. And then I got myself together while I drank and put on some more makeup while I drank and went to work drunk and worked drunk. And drove there drunk, and drove home drunk, and went to bed drunk. And then I got up and did it again, over and over and over. And I drank. Drugs were a big deal when I was coming up. I mean, they were everywhere. And a lot of my friends did them. The people I could get acid from, I didn't want to be their guinea pig to see what would happen. Oh, Mary's so crazy. Can you imagine her on acid? She'd be, no, I'm not here to be your lab rat. So I wouldn't do it with them. I wanted to do heroin. But the people I could get it with or get it from, I didn't want to do it with. So I drank till I nodded. And I drank till I hallucinated. And that name calling, right? I didn't know that was hallucinating until I was like a couple years sober. Do you ever hear that? Ever hear your name? You're around? Nobody's around. You hear? Alcohol, friends. Alcohol. It was scary. It was scary. And I didn't understand why sometimes I could drink one drink. Now, one drink to me was about this tall, and it was about this much alcohol. That was one drink, okay? And that's not me trying to be tough or trying to... I was too young. So I didn't know it was a sign of an alcoholic to not drink in the morning. I thought that was some etiquette shit that society put on it, okay, that you're not supposed to... It's not polite to drink in the morning. I'm underage. I'm drinking when I can, right? Similarly, this is the kind of cups I drank out of. This is what I got from 7-Eleven. That seemed like about the right amount. And I drank about a liter of whiskey a day to stay tipsy. If I wanted to get drunk, I needed to. Except every now and then, the bottom would just fall out from under me. And I'd drink one drink, and I'd black out. And I had no idea why. Alcoholism. Alcoholism. I started to see signs. I wrecked a car. I did this and that. And it was a pain in the ass because then I didn't have a car, which made it harder to get alcohol and harder to get to work where I paid for the alcohol. I dropped out of high school when I was 16, got my GED, went to college. I was all good for about 2 weeks until I realized that I was trying to work full-time, go to school full-time, and drink full-time, and work, supported the alcohol. So the school had to go. And I went back a year later, and I dropped out to get sober. I tried getting sober one time, and even when I was drinking, though, I would try. Like, I always had spiritual curiosity, right? I always wanted to be. I remember when I was 12, I sat up on my dining room table, and I crossed my legs like a little yoga and put my little fingers together and said, om. I don't know what this is trying to do, om. I like it up here where it's different, but this is stupid, and I got down. Similarly, when I was drinking, I remember I said, okay, I want to connect. Okay, I grew up in America. Most of America is highly Christian. I grew up in a Christian church. I am very grateful I did not grow up in a very fire and brimstone kind of evangelist or strong church, or they were laid back, and I'm grateful because I didn't rebel too bad against it. But I thought, well, maybe I'll live like Jesus. I'll just drink wine and I'll just eat bread for 3 days, and that'll make me spiritual. That'll awaken something in me. And after a day, I threw away the bread and drank the wine and said, I don't get why. I just can't get spiritual. I was trying with the best of my little heart, my little alcoholic heart. I was trying to do the best I could to reach out and fill that empty space, right? I went on, wrecked cars and so forth, like I said. Got sober for 2 weeks. And then I was like, okay, I've been sober 2 weeks. I'm good. Hey, I'm good. I did it. And then I drank. And then I was right back at stuck and stupid. And then I went to a meeting and a party, and it was great. It was a sober party, and it was great, and I really liked it. And I met a woman, and I asked her to be my sponsor. But this was in 1981, and long distance was a deal. I mean, I don't know how many of you even know what long distance is, but we used to have to pay to call people if they were out of our area. She was out of my area, man. And I worked from noon to 8. So morning meetings, I was still asleep. Noon meetings, I had to be at work. Afternoon and evening meetings, I was still at work. And midnight meetings, my curfew was midnight. So I couldn't get to meetings except on my days off. And I didn't have a car because I wrecked it. I couldn't call her very often because it was long distance. I stayed sober on the first 3 steps of this program and very white knuckles for about 6 months. Until one night when I was alone. I used to work on cars with guys all the time. These guys in my neighborhood, we'd hang out and work on cars. That was fun. Drinking was what I did to get myself out of the house so that I could be functional. When I got there, I didn't really drink with them. That wasn't the point. The point was to work on cars, and it was fun. I was alone in Jeff's garage with a beer one night. He had gone in the house, and I'm like, nobody would know. Guess what? I knew. And that started to relapse. Because I knew I was drinking. And I sure knew I was drinking the minute it hit me. Because I am, thankfully, an alcoholic. And the minute that alcohol gets in my system, my body, the monster wakes up. We're going to get some more of this. Yeah. I didn't realize that was going to happen to me, I think. And it was hard. But I also was getting ready to take a trip to come see my dad. And I hadn't seen him since I was 8 years old. And I wanted his respect. And the only way I knew to get a man's respect was to drink them under the table. Okay? I needed to start building my tolerance. I'd been sober for almost 6 months. I had a plan. Okay. It's a good plan. And it kind of worked. I mean, I came to Georgia. I drove here drunk. My car broke down in Tennessee. And my dad had a friend in Tennessee. And he fixed my car and sent me and my girlfriend to Opryland for a day. We had a great time. Drove the rest of the way here. Got drunk with my dad. Got high with my dad. I got high at some point. And I liked marijuana a lot. That was my other drug of choice. Alcohol was my first drug of choice. Marijuana was up there too, though. I liked it. We visited here, went back home, drove home drunk. Hallucinated while I was driving. I have no idea how I got home. There are scary parts of my story where, after being sober, people would ask me things like, do you remember that time we went to Six Flags and we had my mom's brand new Cougar and I was scared to drive it because we'd been drinking, so you drove it and you drove them people off the highway up on the embankment and we didn't stop. Do you remember that? I do now. Why'd you have to bring that up? Lord. So, what finally got me sober was coming to see my dad for Christmas for the first time. So, I had gotten sober again. I dropped out of college to get sober. Gotten sober again. There was a boy. I moved myself. It was supposed to be my first one-night stand. I moved myself into his apartment by the end of the weekend. I fucked up everything. He was going to come to Georgia to spend Christmas with my dad, too, and he was sober. So even though I had relapsed, I went on the road as an actress to save up money to become an auto mechanic because that's how my life works. And so we were paused for Christmas because we were doing school assemblies, and my boyfriend was coming to Georgia, and so I had relapsed while I was on the road with my partner on the road. And I got to my dad's, and I'm like, okay, I can't drink in front of my dad because he's just the kind of son of a bitch that if he offers me one in front of my boyfriend, I feel like I don't drink, and he'd be like, you drank with me last night. Yeah, I couldn't depend on him to keep no secret, so I just wasn't going to drink in front of him. And me watching my dad drinking was exactly, I wasn't raised with the man. My mom left my dad when I was 2 months old. I saw him once when I was 5 for about 2 days. I saw him once when I was 8 for about a week. And then I didn't see him again until I was 17. I didn't learn how to act or how to be from this man. I was exactly like him. When we're angry, we smash glass. We drink to eat the anger. That fire eats the anger. We are exactly alike. So me being sober, having to look at my dad drunk, I realized for the first time, see, I thought I was going to die from this disease. Everybody was dying from this disease when I was coming up. It's like now, everybody's dying from fentanyl, right? And you know, if you do fentanyl, you don't care if you die, right? That's who cares? And that's how I felt about alcohol. I don't care if I die. New adventure. Let's go. But for the first time, it occurred to me, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die. I'm going to live like this. And it's one thing to be a 17-year-old female. And you know how we are, girls. We know we can turn that on. We know we can blink those eyelashes and get away with stuff. And it doesn't matter what we look like. And it doesn't matter if our hair's over here and our underwear's outside our pants. Because we know we can do the thing if we need to do the thing to get by. But the idea of doing that thing 40 years later, at my dad's age, and still being alive, oh no, no. That was the thing that finally scared me enough to not drink until I cared about myself enough to stay not drinking. That was it. And that happened December 17th, 1983. So there's a whole lot of time and a whole little bit of minutes that I have left to tell you about how I've stayed sober a day at a time since then. And the number one thing is, you gotta wanna. If I could give you anything in life, I would give you wanna. Because if you want to stay sober, I've served cocktails as a job. I've lived with people who are using. I have run guns. I have turned trips in sobriety. I've done everything you can possibly do and not pick up a drink or a drug in the past 43 years. Okay? If you want to stay clean and sober, you will. Now, do I recommend those things? No. Those were some stupid things. I was young, okay? I came in here young, and I didn't have much of a war story to tell you, so I wanted to go out and earn some experience. And luckily, I had a sponsor who didn't tell me no, because if she'd have told me no, I might have gone back out. But she said, Mary, you can do anything you want as long as you don't drink. You can go anywhere anybody else can go as long as you don't drink or drug. That is the rule. And I kept it. There are days I kept it for stupid reasons. I had my first sponsor, her name was Sammy. she had to go get something from a girl that she sponsored that was 16 and had relapsed, and we went to the girl's house, and it was morning, and she was hungover and burnt out and had that Joan Jett rock and roll cool burnt to the leather kind of look to her, and I was like, ooh, I want that. I want to be that. And a little tiny thought, thank God I've been going to meetings, friends, because the meetings are like a bank. You collect money here. You just put a little money in. Just put, you know, get a little money out. Let it flow in. And then you're out in the world and you got a little money when you need it. And the little money that day was because I had turned 18. See, I was 17 when I got clean. And I had turned 18. And this little thought said, if you drink and use today, when you're 67, you won't have 50 years of sobriety. It was really stupid, but it kept me sober that day. It did. And I drank for stupider reasons, so I might as well stay sober for stupid reasons, right? So I did that. The first step was not hard for me. The higher power thing, I had to look, because I told you, I always wanted that spiritual connection. And I found it here. But what I found was that I had to find my own. I had to find something, and the big book says that. We're here to give you, to help you find what it is that makes you connected to that outside of yourself that can do what you alone cannot, which is stay clean and sober. And I am genuinely grateful for that permission, because I've looked through all kinds of belief systems and practiced all kinds of things, and I've tried to put God in all kinds of boxes. And here's what I know. Every time I put him in a box, he escapes. Pitiful. Still trying to do the same thing, expecting different results. Pitiful. What I know about God is this. God knows everything I don't. My God is based in love and knowledge. The opposite of love and knowledge is fear and ignorance. So I got no devil to be afraid of, because it's just fear and ignorance. And God gave man choice. And sometimes I make terrible choices that hurt people. And sometimes other people make terrible choices that hurt me. But that tells me that because my higher power gave away some of his power to my choice and my fellow people's choice, gave that power to us so we can learn from it. That's where I got to with it. I get to learn. Today, my biggest prayer of every day is that I stay in the flow. And I learned that from one of my favorite heroin addicts. That was my friend for years and years till he died of fentanyl overdose a couple years ago. But he really was good at just knowing the flow, like not trying to push those waves, you know, because that's me, you know, like I'm a teacher, so crisscross applesauce, everybody, let's go. I'm the boss of this room. It is hard for me not to push that wave. And it's hard for me not to pull against it when it pulls me. But I've learned that my life is best when I do that. My favorite part of the second step, and I'm going to end after this. I was trying to work the second step, and I had a friend named Critter. Of course I did. And I said, Critter, I just don't know about the second steps crap. Critter was a biker. And Critter said, Mary, you're Sammy's sponsor, right? I said, yeah. He said, she got your journaling? I said, yeah. journal every day? Yes, sir. Do you journal? Now, have you journaled for at least 30 days? Oh, yeah. Good. He said, I want you to forget. He said, you're a smart girl. He said, I want you to forget every argument you have against God. I want you to forget that it's the control of the masses. I want you to forget all the arguments about if God is all powerful, he can't be all good. And if he's all good, he can't be all powerful. I want you to forget all that crap and just choose to believe for the next 30 days without fail that there is something out there. It loves you. It cares about you. And you can connect to it in order to stay sober. That's it. That's all. And just keep journaling. I did. What I can tell you from that day to this is there's been many times when my life has been a crisis in faith. I was hit by a car at almost 3 years sober while I was crossing the street thinking about going home to meditate, okay, and have lived in pain since then for the past 40 years. Chronic pain that I don't take drugs for. You know, and know something? Physical therapy sucks, but it works. It works better than drugs. I had cancer when I was 27, breast cancer. I had C-section births. I have had guns held to my head. I have had all kinds of shit happen in sobriety. I've also had 5 miscarriages and 1 beautiful baby who is now 27 years old. I've had failings in school and finally got as far as a master's degree. I have had people look at me terribly and say, some were sicker than others, but no one was sicker than Mayor. And I've had people say, will you be my sponsor? Please. I'm a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I'm truly grateful. It is the greatest thing and the only thing I have ever done for this long and had this much success. I love each and every one of you, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Mary. That was great. There was a lot of stuff in there.
First I slip, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. Look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promise is. All is sometimes quickly. Sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, God wants us, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for our heart. Something that's